Hello friends, we are continuing now with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 103, page 10, excuse me, number 103 on page 356. We have a statement here about Venus and our woeful planet. In this statement, in the fact of the pain and sorrow which are distinguishing qualities of our planetary life lies hid a secret mystery, as I've said, not just a mystery, but one which is very inaccessible. It has to do with the stage of evolution of our planetary logos, his problems along the way in the moon chain, his relationship to the planet Venus. Deep mysteries, which I think must be aspects of the secrets of initiation and not necessarily the lower initiations either. So then we will go on to number 103. I spoke of the necessity for pain and suffering. The fourth purpose of Sanat Kumara relates to the necessity for pain and suffering upon our planet, I think, as a sensitizing mechanism which allows for greater progress in a planetary system whose progress has been somewhat retarded, held back. So, through this relationship, and through the medium of the potencies pouring into our planet, a situation is set up which I might express in the words of the old commentary. When the dual forces of the cosmic brothers, Gemini, become the energy of the one who rides towards the light, Sagittarius, then the fourth becomes the fifth. Humanity, the link, becomes the hierarchy, the bestower of all good. Eventually, through the focus upon the Buddhic plane of harmony and love, wisdom, humanity, working through a second-ray soul and a fourth-ray personality, which is not yet the case, will become the bestower of all good. And then all the sons of God rejoice, and I assume that that will be not only the human beings who will realize themselves as sons of God, but the greater beings who have assisted humanity become what it could become. This is interesting. This talks about the fusion or the merging between these pairs of opposites. So the dual forces become the energy of Sagittarius, meaning there is a link there. It's hard to say from which end of the pole this was inspired, whether the yearning of animal man, inchoate and undirected, but a magnetic, invocative link towards his spirit, or whether the interventionary work, the interventionary impulse from Gemini towards Sagittarius, the impulse of the solar angels, which came first, or whether they both came together. Certainly a point had been reached in the planetary development when the necessity for the coming of the solar angels in relation to the third kingdom of nature had arrived. That necessity had arrived. And really the birth of humanity is a planetary event and signals the growth of Buddhi, the impending growth of Buddhi within the planet, meaning the emergence of the planetary soul on the second ray. Because humanity will eventually become a macrocosm to the three lower kingdoms, its microcosm, and will be a dispenser of the quality of Buddhic love, wisdom, to those lower kingdoms. So the strong connection between Gemini and Sagittarius, the one connection, of course, in which Gemini is not the mediator, but in which Pisces is the mediating influence, is so critical to all that is occurring on our planet, critical to humanity, critical to the elevation of our planet. And we see that elevation of our planet in relation to Gemini by the fact that our planet is the hierarchical ruler of Gemini. We see the move towards sacredness in Sagittarius, a vision of the sacred Earth, and we see the actual elevation of Earth by its hierarchical position in Gemini. Let's see here. A slight study will show you that you have in these three rulers a most interesting sequence of forces. For rays 3, 4, and 5, that is rays 3 of the Earth, ray 4, Mercury, ray 5, Venus, produce a synthesis of activity and of eager potencies. Note those arresting words. Eager potencies which are essential for the development of humanity. These are, in a way, as I see it anyway, the rays of Mercury. Although they are assigned to different planets here and characterize those planets, still the third ray monad and personality of Mercury inferred, the fourth ray soul of Mercury, and the fifth ray submonad of Mercury show the importance of this occult planet so related to the moon chain of the Earth scheme in developing the fullness of the human kingdom, which is ruled by Mercury, and in developing the elevation of our planet towards its soul expression. So they produce an interesting sequence of forces. For ray 3, 4, and 5 produce a synthesis of activity and of eager potencies which are essential for the development of humanity. In this world cycle, and for humanity as it is now constituted, and, you know, let us observe carefully that the term world cycle here will not mean a whole solar system. The term world cycle cannot, in this context, mean an entire solar system. It's one of those generic terms, and you have to read between the lines and beneath the words to find out the type of cycle to which he may be referring and what type of world he may be referring to. A globe is a world, a chain is a world, a scheme is a world, a system is a world, and our local cosmos has its own connection with the term world. In this world cycle, and for humanity as it is now constituted, you have one, ray three, active intelligence under the influence of this third sign, Gemini, slowly conditioning the etheric body. So this is one of the most definite. Let me get the spelling right. Connections of Gemini with the third ray. It may be a ray which passes through the constellation Gemini and is constellationally mediated, but it's also telling us that ray 3 is under the influence of this third sign, and so there must be some rapport there. There must be something in this Geminian constellation which can strengthen or promote the expression of the third ray. And the etheric body, we know, is the third of the vehicles, if we begin with the lower mind, emotions, etheric body. So the number three, etheric body, and Gemini all are associated factors. Ray four, harmony through conflict. Under the influence of Gemini, Sagittarius. Sagittarius does have, actually, ray four constellationally. Staging those situations upon the astral plane which will produce the conflict in the astral body. The word staging is interesting, you know, pre-designing, arranging for the appearance of, which will produce the conflict in the astral body, which is essential to the final treading of the burning ground and subsequent release, perhaps whichever burning ground it may be, but there always must be a conflict before liberation. There always must be a conflict before liberation. There needs to be a parting of the ways, a clarification of values, with the opportunity for the tested one to put the weight of his consciousness and will upon the correct one of the pairs of opposites concerned. So the lower aspects must be burned away, but they certainly must be seen first as undesirable, and the higher aspects then emerge as dominant. It's almost as if, you know, liberation is a Uranian first ray kind of a condition, and it is as if conflict and ray 4 must precede the liberation connected with Uranus and ray 1. Okay. Then ray 5, concrete knowledge or science under the influence of Capricorn, focusing through Venus, will enable the man to take initiation. And there is a section in which the fifth ray seems associated constellationally with Capricorn. Constellationally. Maybe there's no such word, but I seem to be using that word quite a bit. So there's something said here that makes us think that the fifth ray is also coming through Capricorn. In fact, I don't see why all the rays cannot come through all of the constellations in one way or another. We have a planet, a tiny little planet, in which all the seven rays are well represented, and certainly in each one of these domains through which a lord of a constellation expresses, all the seven rays have to be represented, but the major rays, of course, will be certain ones and not all. So concrete knowledge or science under the influence of Capricorn. So Capricorn does have a connection with concrete knowledge or science, focused through Venus, of course. But nevertheless, Capricorn itself does have an influence, it does have a factor within it related to the fifth ray. So Capricorn, fifth ray, Venus, fifth ray, and initiation, of course, is deeply associated with the greater illumining light provided by that most luminous of all the ray lords, the fifth ray lord. Now, if I can find, you know, without an excessive hunt here, Capricorn, fifth ray, we will see if we have that. And in fact, I had turned to the reference I was looking for in the Capricorn chapter of Esoteric Astrology. And here it is. And, you know, how do you interpret it? On the mutable cross and on the fixed cross, we have the so-called green ray controlling not only the daily life of karmic liability upon the path of evolution, but also controlling the experiences and processes of evolution. The will to evolve, we know, is a third ray aspect of the will. The reason for this is that Capricorn is an earth sign. Earth is green, okay? Third ray is green, third ray personality. And because the third and fifth rays work preeminently through this sign, embodying the major third aspect of divinity, active intelligence, plus that of its subsidiary power, the fifth ray of mind. These pour through Capricorn, the fifth ray too, right? To Saturn and to Venus. And so we see that constellationally, even though three rays, 1, 3, and 7, are given in Capricorn. The fifth ray is also pouring through Capricorn to Venus, just the way the third ray pouring through Capricorn pours to Saturn. I think this goes far to confirm that really we can find any ray in any sign or any constellation, even though the major ray or rays are given to us by the Tibetan. But we can infer, we can understand that such a great being as the Lord of a zodiacal constellation would have, in fact, all the rays. So, embodying the third major aspect of divinity, active intelligence plus that of its subsidiary power, the fifth ray of mind, these pour through Capricorn to Saturn and to Venus. It's not just that the fifth ray association with Capricorn comes only because Venus is a ruler and is a conduit for the fifth ray. So these little hints are here giving a wider picture of possibilities. Okay, so going back then to where we were, we can interpret that the fifth ray is under the influence of Capricorn, pouring through the constellation and focused through Venus. It will enable the man to take initiation. Really, real initiation comes at the third degree, which is ruled by the fifth ray and involves the Ajna center. So that is the beginning of true initiation. The preceding initiations are under the seventh ray and sixth ray, respectively. So these three energies, that is, of the third, fourth, and fifth rays, let's make sure that everything is going properly here. It is. Okay. Are essentially dedicated to the development of the fourth kingdom of nature. Remember, remember here, the fourth kingdom of nature ruled as a creative hierarchy by Mercury, okay, and are polarized in the Earth itself, one of the rulers. So these three energies focused through the three planets governing Gemini are essentially dedicated to the development of the fourth kingdom in nature, and are polarized in the Earth, focused upon the Earth, passing through the Earth, active within the Earth, itself, one of the rulers of Gemini, talking about the intimate connection here between the great constellation Gemini, the predominant constellation, we're told, of the Immutable Cross, and this little being, the Earth. Matter of fact, Earth has a strong relationship to Taurus, a strong relationship to the Lord of the constellation Gemini, and to the great being who is the Lord of the, we can call it perhaps constellation, Sirius. And DK wonders why the tiny Earth, or states, you know, that we might wonder why the tiny Earth is actually related somewhat intimately to the great Lord of the star or constellation Sirius, but so it is. So these are the some of the factors, 3, 4, and 5, Earth, Mercury, and Venus, which make possible the elevation of humanity and also, I think, the emergence of the soul of our planet. Mercury, the star of conflict, is also the major planet of relationships, and so is Gemini, the major constellation of relationships. Notice how the word star here is used, probably meaning a luminous source, not a real star. Well, there sometimes is a theory that our planetary logoi and their planets were once actually stars, at least in the case of Mars. I recall one of our associates digging up that reference, a very recondite reference that suggests that Mars may once have been actually a star. It seems like there's a bit of a demotion having occurred. There are many arcane occult tidbits and references that hint at a far deeper picture concerning our solar system than we really understand. Mercury, the star of conflict, is also the major planet of relationships. It's always an intermediary. It is always a connector of these two things. For it governs and engineers. Interesting, a fifth-rate term, isn't it? A fifth-ray term, if I may use such a term, the interplay between our Earth with its conditioning constellations. Now, he could have said signs, but it's almost as if he alternates in no order that we can discern the use of the terms constellations and signs. It rather throws us off the track. We don't know when he really means one or the other, but effectively the energy of both is the same. In the case of Gemini, it relates our small planet to Virgo on the mutable cross, to Aries on the cardinal cross, where it's the esoteric ruler, and to Scorpio on the fixed cross, where it's the hierarchical ruler. So Mercury engineers or makes possible the interplay between our Earth and its conditioning constellations. Constellations which condition the Earth or Mercury. You know, you could say either one, but I would say here constellations which condition Mercury. Because always the lord of the constellation is going to be the conditioning factor, and the lesser lord, the planetary lord, will be the conditioned one. So certainly these four great lords of Gemini, Virgo, Aries, and Scorpio condition the responses of the lesser lord, Mercury, who is related to them and a conduit for their greater energies. And its mission, therefore, emerges as one of supreme importance. And here we are talking about the mission of Mercury. Through the medium of this interrelation and constant intercourse, this flowing communication between these constellational lords and the lord of the planet Mercury, the three cosmic crosses become closely related. A lesser factor can relate greater factors. Mercury is the lesser factor and has conditioning sources upon each of the three different crosses. The three cosmic crosses become closely related, and in Gemini, certain of the fundamental zodiacal influences, synthesized and coordinated, are focused upon our planet. So Gemini, again, seems to be preeminent here. Preeminent, yes, I would say that. Okay, so continuing here, this sentence, through the medium of this interrelation and consequent intercourse, the three cosmic crosses become closely related, and this is the point, in Gemini, certain of the fundamental zodiacal influences, synthesized and coordinated, are focused upon our planet. It's as if Gemini, being the mediator, can focus these influences upon our planet, since Gemini is so closely connected hierarchically to our planet. He's not saying which ones, but perhaps we can think in terms of the ones we just looked at, Virgo, Aries, and Scorpio. And of course, there would be then, if Gemini were the mediator, the Virgo-Pisces polarity, the Aries-Libra polarity, and the Scorpio-Taurus polarity. This produces strain based upon dualism, the tension between opposites, action and reaction due to the interplay of the opposites, because one of the opposites does something and the other reacts and responds, and that response produces yet another response in the original actor, and so there is a kind of a ping-ponging back and forth of action and reaction. And that condition of potent struggle, which is so, in a way, fourth ray, and of difficulty, which is so characteristic of our planetary life. but which produces eventually the awakening of humanity to full planetary consciousness. We become the adjudicators between the pairs of opposites which Gemini represents. And we can, with just understanding, see the sphere of each of these pairs of opposites, the most important for us being at the moment soul and personality. And in the case of the planetary logos, the full cosmic consciousness, he doesn't yet have it. He's still a cosmic initiate of the first degree, we are told, page 384 of Cosmic Fire. And full cosmic consciousness, well, what is the cosmos of which he's going to be conscious? Perhaps the conscious of our cosmic logos, of our cosmic logos. No, that's cosmic law. Okay. And his sphere, or of the super cosmic logos, the one about whom naught may be said, and his still greater sphere. When I talk about a cosmic logos, at least in the terms that I'm using at the moment, which are allied to, I think, page 293 of Cosmic Fire, I mean the seven solar systems of which ours is one. This is an important tabulation. Here it is. Yes, the cosmic logos has seven solar systems for his vehicles, and a center is a solar logos. But the unknown, who we normally call the one about whom not been said, has constellations. The seven constellations for his vehicle and a cosmic logos, or a constellation, for his centers. I think nothing could be clearer about the distinction between a cosmic logos and the one about whom not be said than this particular tabulation, number 2, page 293 in the treatise on Cosmic Fire. So Mercury and Gemini are contributing to the awakening of humanity to full planetary consciousness through initiation, and, you know, at least the third degree here, because the planetarization of consciousness comes in with that third degree. And awakens our planetary logos to full cosmic consciousness, which certainly must be more than the cosmic second initiation, I would say, more like the third cosmic initiation. Third cosmic initiation. Now, our solar logos has not even taken his third cosmic initiation, but that may be the type of initiation in a series of initiations relating to solar logoi and the cosmic initiations of planetary logoi, who are not yet solar logoi, will be of a lower order. So this produces strain, tension between opposites, action and reaction, the interplay, and that constant potent struggle and of difficulty. You know, it's so Ray IV in a sense. Our planet has the symbol of the cross, and it is of the most often mentioned planets, the fourth from the Sun, Vulcan, Mercury, Venus, Earth. There may be some intra-Mercurial planets there, one of which is said to be a planet called Adonis. But those are generally not referenced and not counted. So there's a lot about number four connected with our planetary logos. But the dualistic influences, the conflicted influences of Mercury and Gemini contribute to the struggles in humanity and on Earth. I think we should say here there is much in Mercury and Gemini of a conflict-producing nature. There's also eventually the fluid synthesis that becomes possible between the no longer conflicting poles. But first we have to go through the process of conflict, and it sensitizes us and wears away the veils which prevent perception. The fire by friction of conflict burns away these veils which inhibit a true sensitivity. The effect is most powerful in Gemini. Maybe, what, more powerful than in Aries or Scorpio or Virgo? So what effect are we talking about here? It's so easy to lose one's track. So Mercury, the star of conflict, engineers various relationships between our Earth and the major and its conditioning constellations, and it looks like we're still considering these other three constellations related to Earth via Mercury and related also to Gemini via Mercury. So let's just say the effect concerning the four mentioned, I would say, is most powerful in Gemini owing to the fact that the two arms of the mutable cross are thus related. And that would be, which arms would they be? Gemini and Virgo. And the result of the activity of Mercury as it rules Gemini is to produce the steady pull between the pairs of opposites. Now, a pull is that which seems to pull apart, you know, to a contention, I would say. A contention between opposite poles pulling in opposite directions, not yet the fluid synthesis. So this effect, it's a conflicting effect, a struggling effect, is most powerful in Gemini or in relation to Gemini owing to the fact that the two arms of the immutable cross are thus related, Virgo and Gemini. There's a lot about these two constellations which in the old commentaries, mantras, and descriptions is similar. And they both have a close connection to the first initiation as well. Although perhaps Virgo produces more of a fusing, an actual integration, whereas Gemini produces a fluid informational interplay with exchanges of substance involved. So, Mercury, as it rules Gemini, is to produce a steady pull between the pairs of opposites. So Virgo is the other. In Virgo, yeah, a pull between them. Of course, they also are contracting poles, and in a way, Gemini will bring, Mercury will bring these ever-contracting poles into closer relation with each other. He does on several occasions discriminate the activity of Gemini from the activity of Virgo, and you have to be quite discerning because sometimes the differences are subtle. But anyway, there is a dualism in the sign Gemini which in a way holds the poles still apart but allows them to be connected in a fluid synthesis, and with Virgo there is a merging. In Virgo it produces that interior struggle between the exoteric not-self and the esoteric self, between the form consciousness, planetary, human, and subhuman, and the soul within all forms. Interior. Now, the word interior is very important in relation to Virgo. Virgo is one of the most interior signs. One of the most interior signs. So there is a merging here, and not a pulling apart, but because the two, that is the exoteric not-self and the esoteric self, have come into such close proximity, the struggle between them is within, almost as if within the same integrating space. A struggle between the exoteric not-self and the esoteric self, between the form consciousness and the soul within all forms. In considering the subject, you will have to consider the following astrological formations. Gemini, Virgo, Mercury, the Earth. Okay. Aha, right. this is not well described in the kind of formation I have here. And rather, I have to turn to a page where we really see how this works. That's page 358. Page 358 of Esoteric Astrology, and here I'll be able to show that more clearly. Oh my. All right. And we're going to have to start this all over again, I guess. Okay, let's see if that can be done. Well, maybe this is a little more descriptive. So, in considering the subject, you will have to consider the following astrological formations. Well, that was not too bad. Gemini, Virgo, and the Earth. Gemini, Aries, Gemini, Virgo, Mercury, the Earth. Gemini, Aries, Mercury, the Earth. Gemini, Scorpio, Mercury, the Earth. And what we see here is the diagrams which illustrate these relationships. Via Mercury, these three constellations are drawn into relation with both Gemini, the constellation Gemini, and with the Earth. He says the importance of these... The importance of these triple formations being based on the fact that they are conditioning triangles with the energies of two constellations focused through Mercury upon Earth. So the conditioning factors, let's just see here if this is correct, the conditioning factors are largely constellations, and Mercury too conditions the Earth. I think we see an important setup here of how it is that constellational energies reach our particular planet. And you know, of course, we could make such triangles as this in relation to other planets, and we could show that the planets are basically conduits for constellational energy, and that we have constellations, generally a sacred planet, and then the recipient, our Earth. So here is the first of these. I would like to, I'm not going to bother with cutting and pasting this at the moment into the reference document. I think we can look at it right here. Gemini, Aries, Mercury, and the Earth, and then we can turn back to the original document, which has the description of the meaning here. Okay, so this Gemini and Aries are on the level constellationally. Mercury rules both. Mercury is an esoteric ruler of Aries, so you wonder if the influence from Aries is not more esoteric than the influence from Gemini, where Mercury is an orthodox ruler. So keep that picture in mind, and I think in a minute here, I'll do this, but put in these triangular pictures. Okay, the potencies of Gemini Aries instilled into our planetary life via Mercury. It's almost as if Gemini and Aries are no constellational energy is going to reach our planet unless mediated through a planet, and maybe in many cases a sacred planet. So Mercury is needed as a mediator. Otherwise, it's as if there would be a hiatus, a gap, between what the constellations themselves could give and what the Earth could receive. So the potencies of Gemini Aries instilled into our planetary life via Mercury focus the energy of the conditioning will to be upon the Earth. Now, that will to be is not so much a Geminian factor of will, but with respect to Aries, it really is. This is the type of will intimately associated with Aries. The type of will intimately associated with Aries. So, this is pretty occult material here, you know, and when I think about how I've studied it over the years, maybe never with the kind of exactitude that is required. And hopefully some of that can begin to come out initially, at least, in this type of discussion. It focuses the conditioning. Now, conditioning means influencing, affecting, determining, you know, forcing or imposing patterns upon a recipient energy. Let me put that down. Conditioning means forcing or imposing patterns upon a recipient focus. So Earth is the recipient, and Gemini, Aries, and Mercury are the conditioning factors. But Aries, especially in this case, because at least we seem to be talking. You know, see, Gemini is found in every one of these triangles, and so is the Earth, and so is Mercury. So the only changing factor is the changing constellation. Okay. Right. So the will to be will be focused on Earth via this triangle, and probably because Earth has such a close relation to Gemini, and I suspect Mercury has a very close relation to the Earth as well. Producing initial beginnings, as in incarnation or initiation, or the start of organizations as well as organisms. So this is an initiating energy, and it operates on a number of different levels. An initiating energy operating at the beginning of perhaps man's entry into the fourth kingdom, or in a way at every return to embodiment, every incarnation, or at the various initiations, because Aries is the sign of initiative. So in a way, Aries, like Capricorn, is involved in every new entry into a larger domain, every passing through a boundary into a still larger field of experience is related to Aries. And that's what initiation is. It's passing through a door, symbolically considered, into a wider field of experience. Initial beginnings, as in incarnation, initiation, or the, you know, we come down to the mundane level, start of organizations as well as organisms, such as Masonry, the Church, and the band that esoteric organisms are intended to be. It should be remembered that there is the will to be in form and the will to be free from form. And you kind of wonder whether Aries can't be involved in both, because there is a sense in relation to Aries we're told, let form again be sought. That is the will to incarnation, but at the same time, Aries, via the liberating burning ground of Uranus, has a tremendous liberative effect that I think will be active at the seventh initiation. We kind of remember DK was talking about the seventh initiation in relation to Aries becoming the major sign of initiation. It is that way in connection with the seventh initiation now, but not in relation to other initiations on our planet. And one day it will be, when our planet is perhaps less earthy. It should be remembered that there is the will to be in form and the will to be free from form, but all these aspects of will are achieved through conflict, there's Mercury, and the interplay, Mercury again, and both Gemini, which energy, both Gemini and Mercury are the eternal symbols, of which the energy of both, of which energy, well, there's a word missing here, I think. I wonder if we can find that there is a word missing when we go to the original text, of which energy, both Gemini and Mercury, I'm going to rewrite it, forgive me here, of which, find that cursor, of which the energy of both Gemini and Mercury are the eternal symbols. So if we want to be free, we have to pass through conflict first. If we wish to be free, conflict is required first. I find this description very occult, very interesting, and very influential on our planet. I mean, think about the of how the energy of Aries in relation to the will to be in form and free from form reaches our Earth, and see then how Gemini and Mercury are both involved, and how this makes this energy available in relation to the pairs of opposites, and how it produces the conflict which will promote this will towards being and towards freedom. Conflicts are necessary. I guess, you know, if I were to sort of summarize here, I would say conflicts are necessary if freedom is to be achieved. And both Mercury and Gemini produce those conflicts. Now, you know, when we think of these two, one a constellation and one a planet, we may not at first have thought so much in terms of conflict. We may have thought in terms of intelligence and the possibility of relationship and all that. But DK is very definite about the Ray 4 quality of Mercury producing conflict. And you kind of wonder, you know, we're only given two rays in Gemini, or one ray. We are only given the second ray as transmitted through Gemini. And we ask, is the fourth ray there to be found as well? We ask that. And it may well, because, you know, the opposites are pulling in opposite directions. He talks about the pull between the pairs of opposites, and we certainly as human beings feel pulled between these, don't we, until we have resolved everything so that we are no longer thus pulled. But always there will be pairs of opposites, even once the stage of integration has been reached. A new higher of the pairs of opposites will appear, and there will be a pull between what we have recently achieved and that which we should achieve in the future. Okay. Mercury, as it relates Gemini to Scorpio and to our planet, has a mass or general effect, for it is the hierarchical ruler of Scorpio. So let's just say what we learn here. When hierarchical rulers are involved, there are mass effects. Now, maybe over here we are going to see this triangle before us. No, we don't. We don't see it. That must be at another point in the book. I'm surprised not to see it. I thought that existed. Maybe it's later in the book. We just see the first one, really. So, Mercury, as it relates Gemini to Scorpio and to our planet, Mercury, the great interrelator, the great relator, has a mass or general effect, a wide effect, affecting many. For it is the hierarchical ruler of Scorpio, and its effect is of a planetary nature, far more than is usually the case. Has a mass or general effect. So it's Mercury that's having this effect, and it's mediating Scorpionic energy. And because it's the hierarchical ruler of Scorpio, there is a widespread planetary effect. Its effect is of a planetary nature far more than is usually the case, and is therefore far more difficult to trace at our present point of planetary development and human consciousness. You know, we are still, in a way, still so individual, and do not think in terms of the whole. So he's talking about a subtle influence here. I suppose, in a way, the orthodox rulership of Mercury in relation to Virgo would be a more obvious effect. The esoteric relationship with Aries, a subtler effect, and the hierarchical relationship of Mercury to Scorpio, a still more subtle and pervasive effect, as he says, hard to trace at our present point of planetary development, and that perhaps he means, let's just say, before becoming a sacred planet. Nope, that's wrong. Sacred. And also human consciousness. Its true significance will not be understood until the consciousness of individual man is also planetary in its scope and grasp. Well, there's the third degree again, you know, what we call the planetarization of consciousness. The third degree and the planetarization of consciousness, in Dane Rudyard's words. Dane, who was, I think, you know, you could say a planetarized disciple. D.K. called him a world disciple, and the true definition of a world disciple is a disciple who has a global effect. It's really a disciple of the third degree, as I understand it. And it doesn't mean just traveling in airplanes, you know, and getting around. It's a lot more subtle than that. So its true significance will not be understood until the consciousness of individual man is also planetary in its scope and grasp. Which is never the case. Well, I should have just waited, right, until the third initiation, because that's what he does say. So this is another confirmation that the hierarchical rulers relate to the third degree and beyond, although you can have what I call anticipations of that hierarchical energy effect before the third degree. You know, you always, what did Master K.H. Say in one place, that one swallow does not make a summer, but or a few swallows do not make the summer, but they presage it. They anticipate it. They point to its coming. I have, what could it be? Mercury, Gemini, Scorpio, and the Earth. There's a Sirian connection there. All three of those factors, Gemini, Scorpio, there's a way in which Scorpio is definitely related to Sirius. He discusses this. Maybe it's in the Leo chapter. Mercury is sometimes called the star of Sirius. All three of those factors are Sirian in their nature. We don't really begin to experience Sirius or any of the prominent fixed stars until the third initiation has occurred. At least we don't experience them with their spiritual import. I sometimes joke and say, well, under Sirius you can get bitten by a dog. I mean, this is true, but that's not exactly what the higher spiritual influence is intended to convey. I have here emphasized two of these relationships between the constellations and the Earth, even though it is not possible for you to grasp the implications. But he plants the seed, perhaps, for those for whom it may be possible. For the general students, such as we are, maybe it will not be possible, but there may be some initiates for whom this is possible. So this is a conflict between the pairs of opposites in which victory can be achieved. The victory of true initiation at the third degree. I'm going to put that down, you know, it might be a good idea, might not. Victory between the pairs of opposites at the third degree. In other words, Gemini gives the conflict, Mercury gives the conflict, but Mercury is also that planet which represents the Buddhic plane and the elevation of the Scorpionic conflict onto the Buddhic level where illusion dies. So this will have a lot to do. He may not discuss this very much, but I think this will have a lot to do with overcoming illusion. Because in a way, Mercury is a planet of illusion. He's the trickster. He's the one who fools, who deceives, at least in his personality nature, his third-rate personality nature. And we know that there's the tendency in Gemini at first to exaggerate and to lie and to mystify and to confuse. All of those things are possible at first. But later, the conflict between the pairs of opposites becomes very, very definite, and under the triumphant energy of Scorpio is won, but it's won through a hierarchical process of which Mercury is the exemplar. It's won through the intuition, or maybe the blending of higher manas and intuition. The illusion wilts upon the Buddhic plane, and pure reason, which is Mercury as well, is revealed, and that banishes all illusion. Another confirmation. That hierarchical rulers. Okay. Right. So he's emphasized here two of the relationships between the constellations and the Earth, even though it is not possible for you to grasp the implications. Well, maybe not, but I hope something here about the overcoming of illusion is actually there. So often in our studies, one is apt to forget that it is not possible for any unit of consciousness within the planetary sphere of influence to conceive of conditions as they exist apart from the Earth, because that small planet is inevitably, for that unit, the very center of his known universe. Well, here, of course, known universe is the key. It's not all about the universe. I mean, what we consider the universe has a lot to do with what we can know about. And this is another one of those protean terms generically used, the word universe. It doesn't necessarily mean the entirety of the cosmos. So we are limited by the perceptions which are possible within the ring pass not of Earth. And under the Great Illusion, the constellations with their rulers and with their prototypal counterparts revolve around the Earth. This is the geocentric perspective, but it's psychologically true. Geocentric perspective, but psychologically true. Because we don't understand the great constellations from higher perspectives, or as if we were actually there, or on any of the sacred planets where their effect is more powerful. Our understanding is limited by our earth-boundedness and by their relation to the Earth. Understanding is limited by our Earth. Oh, give me a capital. Earth-boundedness and by their relationship to Earth, which is not conveying the fullness of what they are. Not at all. Okay, it is time to act as if there is an end here to esoteric astrology adventure number 103A. So let's do that. End of EAA 103A, page 359. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 103B, page 359, and let's make this 0 and 9. Okay, so that's the end of that. All right, but now we go on.